saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
All right, these are the stories we've been wanting to get to all week. There's been a bigger story in the city of Houston, as you might imagine, which is no problem for us. That's why we like this 2 o'clock segment, though. The Houston Rockets are opening their season tonight. Did you know that the Rockets opener is tonight?
Yeah, I did. And only because I was so close to it for so long that I still have so many friends that I was wishing success and good luck on a great year. And even they were the ones saying, you think anybody's going to pay attention to us at all tonight with the Astros game one? And I'm like, honestly, now that I don't work there anymore, no, they're not.
We knew, right? I mean, we
well, you and I will, because we have a little bit more vested interest than most.
I'm excited about the Rockets season. Now, I'm looking at it from a perspective where I don't care too much if they win or lose games. If they win because Jalen Green is like the second coming, okay, you win because Jalen Green's the second coming. If you're winning games because Jabari Smith is the best rookie, okay, fine. You're winning games because Jabari Smith is the best rookie. I think this has the chance of being the building blocks of a playoff caliber team, sure, in a few years. So I'm excited to watch the growth, the development of Green, of Jabari Smith, what Eason looks like in NBA regular season. Can KPJ take that next step? Rockets committing to him a decent amount of money for a year. And then, of course, the four-year contract, which goes year by year. I'm excited with the direction of this organization. So I'm excited about the Rockets tipping off tonight.
I'm excited about their roster. I'm excited in the fact that we've talked about this multiple times. They are a step and a half ahead of where the Texans are because they don't need a franchise quarterback, and they have franchise-type caliber players that they can build around that they know are going to be a part of their future long-term and have the chance to be superstars. And that's always great. I still put the ceiling at 30 wins. I have them winning between 25 and 30 games, but that doesn't mean that games aren't going to be a lot more fun to watch. I think that everybody slept on Tari Eason in the draft, and I think they actually got themselves a steal. Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that another year of Jalen Green and his development should see, you know, better things and more progress. I think the big question mark when I said even before the season started that KPJ had a lot to prove and this was a prove-it year, he got the contract before he had a chance to prove it, but because the way the contract is written, he has to be on his best behavior and he has to play better basketball. I've never been worried about his basketball talents. It's the other stuff that he has to kind of curtail and reel in and get a control of, and I hope he does. But I love this roster. I love the fact that all of them hover in the same age range, so you can see them all build and kind of cohesively grow together. And that's going to be fun to watch as they get better each and every night on the court.
Yeah, the KPJ thing, I love the way they built the contract, because he has 20 million reasons to be on his best behavior for the duration of that contract each and every year. Pretty wise how they did that. Excited about the season. They open up against the Hawks. Jalen Green was asked about facing off against one of the best backcourts in the NBA, and Jalen Green said, well, we're one of the best backcourts in the NBA.
Bulletin board material early from the kid that should just probably worry more about proving himself.
Nick Caserio went on HoustonTexans.com with the voices, John Harris, Mark Vandermeer, rock and roll. Nick Caserio, you could tell this was very like, okay, let's ask the Easterby question and then quickly move on. But Nick Caserio with his first remarks on the departure of Jack Easterby.
Yeah, you know, tough day for, you know, a lot of people in the organization. You know, Jack had a lot of impact on a lot of people, did a lot of good things for the organization in the period that he was here. So certainly it's important to acknowledge that and respect that. You know, we'll look at things just from a football operation perspective and allocate responsibilities accordingly. There'll be some heavy lifting that we'll kind of have to redistribute, but, you know, we'll do the best we can moving forward and just try to make sure that we're doing things that are required week to week to make sure that we're prepared both on the field and then behind the scenes kind of logistically.
When he says heavy lifting, I want you to know he buys note cards in bulk. So therefore, someone has to run the forklift so that they can get all those note cards out of Jack's former office into whoever's going to leave him in the players' lockers from now on. and designate who gets game balls.
Yeah.
That's heavy lifting.
You can tell, like, I think a lot of the Texan fans, when they hear Caserio say this, just kind of a heavy roll of their eyes, right? He did a lot of great things in this organization. Look, Caserio's going to take the high road. The Texans are going to take the high road, as they should. This basically amounts to a nothing burger, I think, from Nick Caserio. Like, we got to say something. We got to address this, and then we're quickly going to move on. Oh, yeah, but we addressed it. Like, the
this
roles...
was the Todd Callis press conference part two.
Yeah, yeah. We have to address this. Let's ask a silly question about it. You do the high road 30-second remark, and then we'll talk about how great time you had on the bye week. The heavy lifting and stuff, like all the roles. Look, I mean, Easterby, like, oversaw nutrition. Like, he oversaw the, you know, sports
team
science.
Chaplain
stuff
and
like
sports
that.
Science,
yeah.
And the note cards and, like, the... You know, the weight room needs with mm-hmm. equipment and things like that.
Which were basically a glorified way of saying, you can be my friend and have a job. There's not going to be any sort of heavy lifting. The Texans will be just fine filling the role of Jack Easterby.
Let's also be clear, when he said he had a lot of influence and effect on a lot of people, including the guy making the comments, Nick Caserio realizes, in part, he was responsible for me being here. So, look, you know, we appreciate Jack's efforts of the past, but it's time to move forward.
Yeah. Nothing Burker from Caserio comments about Jack Easterby. NFL owner meetings have went on the last couple of days, and I can only imagine that this is like an episode of Succession on HBO, where you have a bunch of like really old millionaires and billionaires probably that are just like, oh, I want power here. I want power here. And they're trying to flex and dunk on each other. Jerry Jones telling Robert Kraft, don't mess with me, and some other terms that he used along the way. You have Jim Irsay, who's never been the model citizen in the NFL, saying that Daniel Snyder has merit to be removed as the owner of Washington, but he actually called him their old nickname and not the commissioner. Commanders. Like, I want to go to an NFL owner meeting and just watch all of these billionaires who are delusional and don't really know anything anymore just throw around insults after insults.
It's like
each
the
other.
Old Muppet Show and watching a heavyweight battle between Stadler and Waldorf, the two guys in the balcony,
yeah.
And just seeing how they duke it out and what they could come up with that you would chuckle at going, that was a verbal beatdown? I mean, what was that? I mean, when I heard that Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones were going at it, quote unquote, in the lobby and having like a verbal altercation, I'm like, oh boy, I'm sure that was monumental. And people around were like, although Jerry dropped an F-bomb. I mean, what I really would like to see, though, is I'd like to see owners hold accountable other owners. If Snyder truly was the POS that he's basically portrayed himself to be with all of his actions and what the articles and stories have been, then I think it behooves all of the owners to hold them accountable. And if they know things that we don't, say, you know what? It is the time, and the time is now. We don't need guys like you giving owners in this league an even worse reputation. You need to go, because that's not the way we operate football teams, no matter when we've operated football teams. I think from the standpoint of Roger Goodell's contract coming up, I know Jerry Jones has been adamant to try and get rid of him. He's always been the one nay vote in trying... The fact that Roger Goodell over two-year period made estimated $128 million to be commissioner of the NFL.
Good for him.
It's unbelievable.
He's paid by the owners.
It's ridiculous.
He's paid by the owners. Only a couple million for each owner, right? That's not so bad. You're on the payroll of every team in the NFL.
I need that Barstool shirt sooner rather than later.
The Goodell with the clown?
The clown nose. Yeah.
I don't know what Goodell does bad, though.
Like, I don't know what he does, period, aside from not use past precedents to make decisions. Drag out other decisions, protect ownership.
He does protect ownership. That's his job. That's his job, is to protect ownership. Speaking of Jones and the NFC East, did we think the NFC East was going to be this good? The simple answer is no. The Eagles are undefeated. The Giants have one loss. The Cowboys look like a playoff team. No one saw this coming. No one saw that the best division
Tyler
in football.
Tyler Heinicke might be looking to get a big W this weekend. I think he's got a chance.
Other than the Commanders, Chase Young is his biggest hype man. But the NFC East, man, we thought that this was going to be the worst division in the NFL. Quite the contrary. It might be the best division in
think
the
about
NFL.
It. Think about a role reversal. At the start of the season, we both said that the AFC West might be the best division in football. And now, 6 weeks in, pretty good argument that the NFC East is the best division in football.
Yeah, I think they very well could be. Which, by the way, smart on the Cowboys not to play Dak Prescott in that Eagles game, because you have the built-in automatic excuse. Like, one, go with the quarterback that's undefeated. Like, ride that hot hand until that hot hand
not
is cold.
Anymore.
So, like, I was totally fine going Cooper Rush even if Dak Prescott was healthy. Let him lose a game and then you make the switch. But why it's perfect in that game? Because if the Eagles beat you, okay, well, we didn't have Dak. we're going to get Dak back. And Dak's going to be the difference the next time
that
we play.
That's why, as much as we thank Cooper Rush for his efforts during the time Dak was out, that's why Dak's our franchise quarterback. That's why we go back to Dak. It's the old Rudy T adage from years and years ago, where you ride the hot hand until either they stop you or he stops himself. Well, he stopped himself with interceptions. Dak's waiting in the wings. Perfect transition back to it. People want to talk about a trade, they can look at Cooper Rush, but otherwise, we got an insurance policy for our starting quarterback, who's the guy that's supposed to lead our team.
Yeah, Cooper's like the perfect backup quarterback for Dak. Speaking of trades, Christian McCaffrey is reportedly on the blocks. What teams do you think make the most sense for Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I don't know. With his contract and the fact that I don't think anybody's going to pay top dollar for him, I mean, I haven't completely thought about it. Just trying to glaze over the league. I mean, with Denver losing a running back and looking like the fact that, as much as I love Melvin Gordon because he's a Badger, he doesn't have it as an every down back anymore, they could be grasping at more straws trying to salvage Russell Wilson and all the stupid moves they've already made, and they could possibly try and get him. But I don't know that there's many teams where Christian McCaffrey would even be a fit.
To me, there's two that immediately jump out. One, the Buffalo Bills. They've been trying to get a quality running back there for a while. They tried to draft James Cook, I think, in the second. I don't think that the salary this year, I think the way that he rewrote the contract, that his like cap hit is not a ton this year. The Bills have showed that they're willing to spend high draft picks on running backs. James Cook hasn't really panned out. James Cook in a first for Christian McCaffrey. I mean, Carolina, you get a first-round pick for an aging running back that's not going to be part of your long-term plans. The second one, who's the team in the NFL? I don't know what picks they have left, so maybe this isn't even an option.
How about Frisco?
Who's the one team in the NFL that says F the picks? The Los Angeles Rams, they have some running back controversy, too. They're saying Cam Akers is never going to play it down for them.
Trying to
again,
trade him.
I think the Bills and the Rams would be the best targets for Christian McCaffrey.
Now, the interesting
McCaffrey.
Thing when it comes to the Bills, though, is that Von Miller is already lobbying to get in a veteran that he wants, and it's OBJ. It's not a running back. And I don't think they need another receiver, to be honest with you. Davis has been fantastic.
The Bills really don't.
Yeah, and they've got Diggs. I don't think they need him.
McKenzie's solid.
Yeah.
A lot of people are thinking that Travis Kelce restructuring his contract is clearing room for Odell Beckham Jr., which
I thought that him
that
doing
would be
that
weird.
In season is making room for somebody. I didn't think it was OBJ.
4187 says, why the disrespect for Kevin Porter Jr.? He is a grown A-word man. I'm sure he knows how to behave.
I'm sure he doesn't, and I wish I could tell you all that I know.
He left an NBA game at halftime. He left the arena. I'm sure he knows how to behave. People who know how to behave don't leave basketball arenas as a basketball player at halftime of a basketball game.
He was shipped out of his previous team for attitude issues, we'll call them. And don't think just because he got a fresh start in a new city that quote-unquote saved his life, those all went by the wayside. Let's put it and leave it there.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How much of an advantage is gained with the Yankees playing yesterday? And the Astros have named their Game 2 starter. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The everyday starter for your company should be HR&P, Human Resources and Payroll. You know, it's Cougar owned by Mike Holly. They've been members of the Cougar 100 for the eighth year in a row, almost a decade now. You've seen the HR&P signage at the U of H games, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. You've seen their building off the Beltway, who hangs that U of H flag proudly outside of it. But more importantly, if you're a business owner, let HR&P help you. They can help with HR compliance. They can help with benefits administration. They can help with payroll. They can help with onboarding. HR&P can help in any or all of those areas. There's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small a job, doesn't matter how big a job, HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs, and they'll make sure that it's in the best interest of your business. Your business will be better off for it. Look, if you have a problem or an issue, whether it's in any of those areas, HR compliance, maybe you have a problem there. Maybe you have a problem in onboarding. You just don't want to dedicate the time to that. Let HR&P take a little bit or a lot off your plate. They will find a way to help, and they do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best technology. You'll love that, but you'll love their service as well. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who is familiar with you. They're familiar with your business needs. Look, we use it here at Gal Media. We use HR&P. I have questions all the time because I can't figure out things on my own. I call up HR&P. I email HR&P, and they have an answer that's easy to understand. quickly. They are great. So if you're an employer, help out your employees. They will love this. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HRMP customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out at HRP.
Razor Sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Not only have the Astros named their Game 2 starter, but they've released their starting lineup for Game 1 of the ALCS. Look, I mean, there's really only one question. It's who's going to be your DH? They go with Aledmys Diaz today. So Altuve, Peña, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Gurriel, Diaz, the DH, Chaz, and Martin Maldonado. You okay, Diaz, over Mancini?
Yeah, you and I were talking about it throughout the first hour and a half of the show, curious of which way they would go. And I think of the two struggling bats, the guy that basically has better contact skills at the plate right now is Diaz. I think Mancini looks lost. And I know that I've been the president of his fan club since they made the move, and it was all the trade days and everything else. And for a lot of ways, in a lot of games, he came through big early on. He's fallen off the planet. And much like Jake Meyers, when you could see it in his eyes, he looks lost. I don't know if he can get it back, but I think that the safest move you could make right now is a contact hitter that can get the bat on the ball and can do some things in Aledmys Diaz.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was the biggest trade for Trey guy that there is. He does look lost at the plate. The only, like, I'm not even, like, Diaz is fine. Like, if I'm filling out the lineup today, I'm probably going Diaz, too. I have a little bit more trust in Diaz than Mancini right now. The one thing you think about, it's like Diaz isn't setting the world on fire either. Like, we've been talking about it all ALDS. One of these dudes just go win the job. Like, if Mancini hits a home run, okay, you start him the next day. If Diaz hits a double in the gap, you start him the next day. But if Diaz goes 0 for 4 today, I want Mancini in the lineup tomorrow. If Diaz goes 2 for 4 today, I want Diaz in the lineup tomorrow. And I think that's what Dusty's doing. Dusty's talked about this. Dusty's saying, look, I'm trying to have a dude in that DH spot that wins the playing time. And what's frustrating for Dusty, and what's frustrating for Astro fans too, is that nobody's winning the DH job.
Yeah, no, he leaves the door wide open and says, hey, if you want it, come take it. Just go get it and show me that you want this job and you want it to be yours on a game-by-game basis in this series and going forward. And if you put up any kind of numbers or results, you can have it for the taking. And neither guy has shown that they want it with the way that they played out their at-bats per, you know, each at-bat as they've taken them. I just think of the two, I believe the contact that I've seen of Diaz is better than the boom or bust of Mancini.
That plays more in the playoffs, yeah, too. Mm-hmm. It plays more in the playoffs than it does the 162. You can get away with the boom and bust over 162, not the playoff, which is kind of the Yankees lineup, if we're being honest. B.S. Flea says on Twitch, which is, I believe this, Mancini's been a dud since he came over. Handful of home runs combined with a ton of completely lost ABs. And, like, listening to Mancini
talk, it's easy to say now.
Well, I mean,
in retrospect, as an armchair quarterback.
But, I mean, he's reacting to what we're talking about. He's reacting to Mancini.
Sure, but we all celebrated when he was hitting the bombs early and winning games for them and doing things to knock people in.
Both things can be true, though.
And looked like he was a great fit. But no one's arguing the fact that he doesn't belong in the lineup right now.
Yeah, one thing that's not great to hear, too, is like when you hear Mancini, he's like, oh, you know, I think I've figured some things out. I've been working on some things. Like, he's searching. And searching's not a place where I want a hitter that I'm starting to be in an ALCS. I don't want that dude searching. 713-780-ESPN.
I don't know if I feel confident bringing him as a pinch hitter.
No, actually.
Depending on the scenario, I don't really like it.
I like him more as a starter than a pinch hitter.
Yeah, I would agree with that because he can figure some things out with a pitcher that he's going to see in multiple at-bats over the course of a game. But if I need a big hit and I'm relying on a guy coming off the bench to be better than who's starting the game, I don't know that I have confidence in him.
I think his role is better as a starter than as a reserve. Now, Dusty trying to, like, maybe spark Mancini. Maybe it's a situation where you're up 7-1 in the eighth inning and you're in the bottom of the order and you're like, hey, let's get Mancini at bat to see if he can show us something. Like, that would be a spot where I could see him as a pinch hitter. But to your point, game on the line? I'm not touching it. 0511. We know that Trey is very streaky. Isn't it worth trying to get him hot again over a guy that's not hitting well either? I think that's what Dusty's doing. I think that he is looking for a hot hand. He's giving Diaz a chance. Diaz hasn't done it. He's giving Mancini a chance. Mancini hasn't done it. If you go look at the four games in this playoff, Game one, Mancini was the DH. Game two, Diaz was the DH. Game three, Mancini was the DH. Today, the fourth game of the playoff, game one of the ALCS, it's back to Diaz. He's basically rotating.
Like I said, he's basically saying, go take it. Take the stranglehold on the position and go tell me that you're going to earn it and want it for the rest of the playoffs. Until he sees that, he's just going to keep rotating them, hoping one guy breaks out of it.
6-0, 3-0 Diaz swings have looked atrocious lately, too. You're not wrong.
I'm not arguing that.
Swinging at some sliders 3 feet off the plate. I think Hensley would be good right now. See, that's not something that I would expect Dusty to do. It's not something I would advocate for.
I'm also not sure
the texter's wrong.
I'd be okay with it. Again, I'm looking for contact at this point in the season.
Yeah.
If I've got two guys struggling, the boomer bust guy is Mancini. The contact guy that can hit fastballs is Diaz. I'm looking at a guy like Diaz as the guy that I would lean to more because of the fact that I think he has a better chance of breaking out of it with a seeing eye single or some kind of hit it where they ain't, as well as Mancini is trying to hit a home run. And look, from a Hensley perspective, he's put bad on baseball. I don't think Dusty, the way he plays veterans and favorites, will do it. But if he did it, I'm not going to argue it and say it's a bad move.
The text line's asking 5619-713-780-ESPN, by the way. Would you re-sign Uncle Mike for market, overpay for Benintendi or other, and what's the other? The free agent market in the outfield's not great.
It's not good.
The other is probably your farm. It's probably, you know, with Durden. Durden's the left fielder in Sugarland. Maybe a Corey Jolks, whoever could win that job, which isn't like the best way to go into a season if you're a team that has World Series aspirations. I don't want to overpay for Benintendi. I think Benintendi's basically Michael Brantley, but a little bit younger. So I wouldn't want to overpay for Benintendi. If you want to go Mike for market value, I'm okay with that because of the free agent market in left. We talked about this a little bit yesterday.
Yep.
I don't love the idea of Yordan Alvarez playing the field during the regular season because his bat is too important. But if you want to go with a 50-50 split again with Brantley and Yordan as your left fielder DH, fine. I'm okay with it.
I think price matters. I think if you get Uncle Mike that said he wants to continue to play here and he loves it here and he gives you the hometown discount, you know Uncle Mike, as long as everything's right from him physically with his health and coming off the surgery, you know he's a steady bat at the plate. He's a clutch hitter at the plate. He's an average guy, hit for average guy at the plate. The pop might not be there, but all the other things are there, and he plays a steady left field. He's not going to wow you with his arm or dive and get a ball in the gap. But you know what he's going to do? He's not going to make mistakes either. And I think that he knows Minute Maid Park, and he's very much beloved in the clubhouse. I think at the right price, Michael Brantley coming back is just fine. It's a perfect short-term fix for the Astros.
Yeah. So the Astros have announced their Game 2 starter. No change. They're not switching it up at all. Framber Valdez will get the Game 2 start. Now, they didn't announce their Game 3 starter, but the Astros aren't getting cute with the rotation, which, like, we had a pretty long debate a segment or two ago about, you know, how this is the best way to set it up. I'm fine with them not getting cute. Like, Justin Verlander's been your dude all year. Framber's been your second-best dude all year. Go to work. Let them be the horses.
We will settle our debate with who gets the third start.
Yeah, we will. We will. Now, I tweeted this out before, like as soon as the Mariners game was over on Saturday, I started to look ahead at what the Astros rotation would look like. To me, it was pretty simple. It was Verlander, Framber, McCullers, Javier, Verlander, Framber. That gets you to a Game 7, and by that time, all hands on deck.
I just think that if you're going to dabble with it at all, I think Javier is your third starter because I think he has proven that he can bounce back quickly with a rubber arm and still give you effective outs. I don't know how long he could go, but that's why I would put him in the third spot.
I don't hate it. If that's the way that they go, I'm not going to have a whole lot. I'm not going to stand on this table and yell a lot. 713-780-ESPN. You go with Framber getting the Game 2 start. 713-780-3776. First things first, though. Justin Verlander, 6 straight bad playoff starts. Are you still confident in JV? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you are confident in JV, maybe you want to put a little bit of money on the line for the Astros tonight. If you're confident in the Astros, maybe you want to put a little bit of money on the line for some future bets, for some ALCS bets. If you're confident in the Texans on Sunday, maybe you want to throw down some money. If you're doing that, the place you should do it is BetUS.com. It'll be your favorite sports book. They're back for their 28th year of NFL action, nearly 3 decades, and they have the industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%. BetUS offers all kinds of bets that you can make on all sorts of leagues. NFL, of course, college football, all that you would expect, baseball, NBA, much, much more. BetUS also, while you're sweating out those sports bets, how about you check out the casino games that they have? The coolest European slots, those new ones, those are great to have. If you're a table game kind of guy, they have live dealers at those table games, which is great to have as well. You need a sports book with integrity. You need a sports book with longevity, and you need to know you're going to get paid. You need a sports book that offers everything. Live betting, MMA, Saturday morning for some MMA, golf, horses, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets. And your favorite parlays, too. Call today at 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS. And they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gives better bonuses than BETUS. Join now. Mention 97.5, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BETUS.com. Join today. That's BETUS. We're the
92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You see how hard it is to score runs against us, besides me, in the first series. You know, and that makes it a lot easier to win baseball games.
Justin Verlander with a little bit of self-deprecating humor yesterday, talking about, hey, look, the Astros, we were really good in the ALDS. We were hard to scratch some runs on. Except for him, Verlander, last six playoff starts, 0-4, 6.40 ERA. Last good start was in 2019 against Tampa Bay. You still confident in Justin Verlander?
You know I am. And you know I think that I have all the reasons why, in looking at what the body of work he put together for this team this year, and knowing that if you're going to win the Cy Young Award, have the ERA and all the statistics that back it up too, I'm not going to lose a ton of sleep over game one of the LDS. I'm going to be worried about how you pitch tonight a little bit more than I probably normally would. I'm going to be watching a little closer. But I'm definitely not considering anybody other than you for the job. So go out and do your job and do it like you've done and consistently done since you've been an Astro. And everything will be fine. Everything will calm down. And everybody will change their opinion yet again and see how irrational they were being and thinking he shouldn't get the ball tonight.
That's overall how I feel. I'm going to be watching a little bit closer to see if Justin Verlander might have trouble early. Some of the stuff he was talking about, too, like we have a texter, 713-780-3776. I would be a lot more confident in JV if he hadn't mentioned his injury and tinkering with his mechanics. I hear that, too, and I don't love that the ace of this staff is talking about mechanical issues and trying to search and figure things out. It's like we were talking about Mancini, where he's searching. It's not a great place to be when you're in the midst of what you're hoping is a deep playoff race. Like, if you look at Verlander, too, like, since he came back after that calf strain, he had four starts in the regular season before the playoffs. He went, in his first start back after the calf strain, he went five no-hit innings. Now, it was against the A's in a Triple-A lineup, but he went five no-hit innings against a Major League Baseball team. Against Baltimore, who was in the playoff race, he went six innings, gave up two runs. Against Arizona, who, you know, Arizona's not great, seven innings, two runs, one of them earned, struck out eight. His last regular season start against the Phillies, who are up 1-0 in the NLCS, he went five no-hit innings, striking out 10.
But so, like, that was against the lineup that was hungover that a lot of their guys were sitting.
Was that the day after or was it 2 days after?
I think it was the day after.
Okay, but still, five no-hit innings, striking out 10. Yep. That against, yeah, maybe even their B team. That's still five no-hit innings, striking out 10. I look at Verlander, like, two things that I look at this. I don't love that it's an ace trying to figure out the mechanics. Secondly, like, he pitched four games, the mechanics were just fine. I think it's a bit of an excuse, to be quite honest.
I don't. I think it's more of a mad scientist where, you know, we see Bregman do it all the time, and maybe he does it too much sometimes, but he's constantly between the cages and having every one of his swings videotaped, analyzing, and then watching his at-bats after, you know, he's had them in games. And I think that the true guys that are so dialed into loving the game and being, you know, obsessed with doing what they do, they're going to say tinker. They're going to continue to search and look and evaluate. And I think that's what makes JV so good, has made him one of the best in the game for his career. I think that this isn't unlike probably any other time in his career. It's just that because it was a negative stretch, people are hyper-analyzing it and anything that he says about it to where if he was tinkering. I think that we all know that pitchers look at their release point. They look at if they're tipping pitches. They look at, you know, all the different small little idiosyncrasies and things that can make the difference with major league hitters at bat to at bat. And hopefully he's figured something out.
Yeah. Going into tonight, knowing his last appearance that he had this season, which was against Seattle, was not very good. Knowing that he has went his last six appearances in the playoffs with nearly a 6.5 ERA and an 0-4 record, do you think the hook's quicker?
I think it could be. But I think, look, I was going to say, but as you were just leading into that, I think all the caveats that he's had in his favor about being able to tell a pitching coach to go back in the dugout, to being able to tell Dusty he's staying in the game, I think those are out the window. I think because you don't know completely if it's the old JV again. I mean, if it's a better JV, that's great. But I think him being able to dictate everything about his starts is out the window for the short term, and we just have to see what JV we get. The one thing I will say is I believe Angel Hernandez is behind the plate tonight. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing from a consistency standpoint, but the one thing that I think is, I know JV has a good relationship with him, and I think about the pitches that he was missing with, that he wasn't getting called for strikes early in the Seattle game. They were up in the zone. They were at the top half of the zone. I think that Seattle, with the younger hitters that they have, with the Ty Francis of the world, with the guys that focus on and have a good concept of the low ball and the strike, the strike zone, I think the Yankees hitters are more apt to chase high pitches. Whether he gets them called or not, I think he'll get more swings and misses on chases high in the zone. I don't know how Angel Hernandez might affect being behind the plate for a Verlander start, but if it is truly him, I think that I've seen the interactions between Angel and Justin, and it seems to be good, so I hope that's the case.
I don't think Angel Hernandez is on the crew. I just Googled it.
I saw someone
and
tweet
up
the other day, Angel Hernandez behind the plate for game one.
The two NL...
I hope he's not.
Maybe this is last year? No, this is Major League Baseball today announced the Major League umpires who have been assigned to the 2022 ALCS-NLCS. This was October 18, 2022. Hernandez is not on either crew.
Good. Well, then he'll probably be suing the
league. So no Angel Hernandez. I don't know who's behind the plate today, but every umpire has like their own strike zone.
Yeah, I think that high strike zone. The point I was making, though, was that high strike zone wasn't called in the Seattle game, and I don't know who it was that was behind the plate.
Yeah.
But Justin obviously had an issue with it. When he tried to adjust, he got to hit pretty good, and he gave up 10 hits or whatever it was and multiple runs. I hope that he just establishes his zone and understands also that his high pitches are going to have a higher swing and miss rate against this lineup as opposed to Seattle's lineup.
Especially this lineup is where you want to have those high fastballs. It's why the Astros had a lot of success against the Yankees lineup this year, is they were having that high fastball either called a strike or they were getting swings and misses on it. 713-780-ESPN. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line. Austin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Austin?
Hey, guys, big fan. To be honest, I'm going to echo Mr. Blank here, and what he always says is you got to believe in the talent. I really honestly think JV has the talent. I think, they had some bad outings. You could say one reason or the other, but I believe that JV with his talent alone can definitely just kind of overcome these past couple starts in the playoffs from the past few years, and I think he'll be able to pull through. Now, I do agree with y'all stating that there could be an early hook, and I don't necessarily think that they would pull him after a run or two, but when it gets three runs or anything, I think it's like, okay, it's time to pull out. And I don't think it doesn't matter what inning it is, right? I mean, if it's the third inning, the fourth, the fifth, even the second, I think they might pull him out.
Appreciate the call, Austin. You kind of broke up there a little bit, but we get the gist of the conversation. I agree with you there as well, Austin. I don't think it's going to be it's not going to be Captain Hook, the first opportunity to pull Verlander out of the game. But I do think it's going to be quicker than we saw game one of the ALDS. There is one off day in this series that comes Friday. So if you're going to have a quick hook, it probably has to be games one, game two. Also knowing that both of these starters are going to be pitching again, in this series. And also with the bullpen that you have, this bullpen is a weapon. So knowing that this bullpen is a weapon, I think you have to have a quicker hook, a shorter leash on Verlander today than you did game one ALDS.
Yeah, because of the day off, I don't think it's going to be dictated on a shorter hook by pitch count as much as it's going to be by the scenario that plays out. If it's a high leverage situation and you look at him and you've seen him with the eye test all game and you're evaluating it knowing he doesn't have his best stuff or he just still isn't as sharp as he has been, then I think that you're warranted in going and getting him earlier than you normally would, no matter how much he wants to stay in the game. And like you said, you have the fallback of knowing your insurance policy of the guys you have to choose from are guys that are fully capable of getting the job done.
If knowing the umpires is your thing, they sound like a Yankee crew, by the way. Home plate umpire Mike Michlinski is calling the balls and strikes tonight. The crew chief is Alfonso Marquez. He's at first tonight. Adrian Johnson at second. Vic Carapaza at third. Does not sound like a Yankee crew. Left fielder is Chris Guccione, and the fielder is Chris Conroy. So those are your umpires. You have a little bit of a fantasy umpiring.
What does the Yankees crew sound like?
Like a bunch of those names. They sound Italian.
They sound like
they're from the Northeast.
Name.
Do they not? Does Carapaza sound like a New Yorker, or does it sound like a Texan? You tell me.
Well, it does sound more like a New Yorker
there
than
you go.
A Texan.
Michlinski,
sure.
Does that sound like more like a New Yorker or more like a Texan?
I'm sorry, who is that one?
He sounds more Michlinski.
Michlinski. How about Guccione? Does that sound like more like a New Yorker or more like a Texan?
Sounds like the guy that runs
the
porn
empire.
All
you're saying is that there's some Italians on this.
Yeah, it sounds like a much more New Yorker crew than it does a Texan crew. That's all I'm saying. You get a Carapaza, you get a Guccione, you have a crew that's pulling for the Yankees.
Nice stretching.
That's all I'm saying. Maybe they would give Mancini a nice little strike zone. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. Maybe Mancini will be in the lineup when Guccione or Carapaza is calling the balls and the strikes.
Well, maybe if it
maybe buys so.
A bigger strike, I mean a smaller strike zone and a better chance for Trey Mancini to succeed, then more power to it. Not tonight, though.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's ask a Will Houseman, how much of an advantage is gained with the Yankees playing a game yesterday? And should they have a quicker hook on Justin Verlander today? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I tell you, this New York umpiring crew, if they're calling it very one-sided tonight, I'm going to have a long night with Gentle Ben at my side. Might not be great for y'all tomorrow. I like a good drink at the end of the day. The vodka, the gin, the bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. There's no questioning my rotation. And a local Texas brand, Gentle Ben Spirits, does it better than anyone else. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Percedo craft technology. It's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste that huge difference I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M Class of 85, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth, it is clean, it eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. Also online at gentleben.com. Looking for that bourbon? Head to that tasting room in Alvin. Perfect spot, by the way, if you're looking for a private party or event. Check it out at gentleben.com. Great spot for that. Are you headed to the Rockets home opener on Friday? We'll stop by the Gentle Ben Bar on the main concourse inside the Toyota Center and enjoy some nice Gentle Ben spirits as you're watching the Rockets home opener on Friday. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentle Ben.
Law. Morley Law. Se habla español.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Join Culture Map October 27th for the tailgate. This is not your typical party in a parking lot. The tailgate is a celebration of the culture and lifestyle of sports and the fans who cheer them on. Expect tailgate-inspired tastings from your favorite restaurants, including Street to Kitchen, Dish Society, Sticky's Chicken, and many more, plus signature drinks, game day activities, and entertainment. Tickets are on sale now and include all food and drinks. Go to culturemaptailgate.com. That's culturemaptailgate.com to get your tickets today and use promo code ESPN for $15 off any ticket type. Ace of Spades, Motorhead, that's Justin Verlander's music. Did we play that last time that Justin Verlander pitched, Brendan?
Yes, we did.
Did we have an explanation of why he pitched poorly?
Yes, I'm afraid that we did.
I couldn't remember. Was it, we weren't.
I'm pretty certain the only person I've ever forgotten is Garcia.
We're going to be at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow. We were there for game two of the ALDS. It wasn't game one, right? Of the Seattle series?
I think that's correct.
I think it was game two.
Yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm.
So that's our game two spot for all of these series. We'll be at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow. Will House will be at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow.
The only thing
that's
salvaged,
well,
Mr. I'm jumping on the bandwagon game one of the Seattle series, and then it would have been disastrous if they had lost, was Jordan. So that's why Brendan's okay and isn't blamed for the loss in
What happened last round?
They swept won the series.
They
didn't
just win. They won convincing.
Do not ignore in victory what you
had they
defeat.
Not win, have won that game, you would have had hell to pay.
This is ridiculous.
I was hoping you had forgotten to play the song so we had a reason for why JV
I was too.
The way that he
I
did.
Was kind of wishful there.
So now I'm mad at you that you did your job.
There is a reason. It's because he struggled the last 10 postseason games.
So it really is the mechanics, and it's not Brendan Riley. Not playing his
song.
Do
your job worse next time. Yeah. All right? Come on now.
Yeah, forget to play it. Maybe that's what you should have done. You should have forgotten to play it. Brad Kellner hanging out with us. He'll be at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow as well.
Signing autographs, taking selfies.
Yeah.
Worthless autographs and worthless selfies, but I
will
if you want
them.
Depends
on the facial expressions you and the others make.
The others?
You know, the people taking the picture with you.
Oh. Yeah, that's more valuable than I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you think you were talking about Cody and Jake?
Yeah, I did. If Jake makes that weird face he always makes in Brendan's Twitch camera before our
show.
Yeah,
he'll do that whole animal thing again where he shakes his head and goes, yeah, 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 yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if he does that, that might be worth a little something.
If there was audio.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Speaking of Verlander, we know the numbers. We know that he hasn't been good in his last half a dozen playoff starts. The what have you done for me lately wasn't good in game one of the ALDS. Even Justin Verlander alluded to that yesterday with a little bit of self-deprecating humor. How quick do you think the hook is on Justin Verlander tonight?
Not that quick. Probably similar to what we saw in game one. I mean, hopefully we don't see something similar to what we saw in game one of the Seattle series, but I think Dusty's going to try to give JV as many opportunities as he can to get out of any damage, any situation that he gets himself in. But the good news is, I mean, you've got Luis Garcia, you've got Jose Urquidy, you've got Hunter Brown, right? You've got guys who can eat innings out of the bullpen just in case JV struggles again. But, you know, Dusty, you guys know this. Dusty's always been a man of the people. He's always been a guy who backs his players, right? And that's why his players love him so much. So he's going to give his
players. What did he say after the Verlander start in the Seattle series? I'd have started him tomorrow if I could.
Exactly.
He believes in him. There's no reason why any of you fans out there shouldn't believe in him too. Everybody has a hiccup now and then. Let's just hope he finds it, figures it out, and does what he's supposed to do.
He's going
to
give any of his players the benefit of the doubt, but especially a guy like JV who's done so much for this team and done so much for Dusty over the last few years. So yeah, now that's the type of manager he is, and for better or for worse, that's what we're going to get.
Was
what?
It you dance with the date that...
Dance with the one that brung you?
You
dance
brung
with
you,
the so devil?
Just, no, I didn't go that route.
Calling
no.
JV the devil? Yeah.
No, I'm not
one
calling
one bad
JV
start?
Put a pitchfork in that, please.
I'm curious, you brought up the bullpen. Like, I'm really interested in the bullpen usage because we saw it was kind of different in the ALDS. Like, we saw Brian Abreu more than we saw Ryan
we sure
Stanek.
Did.
And, like, Ryan Stanek literally had the best ERA for a reliever in Houston Astro history, and all of a sudden he's demoted. Now, well, I think some of it was to attack the lefties at the bottom of the order. Now you have a heavy right-handed lineup. I'm curious to see, like, what the hierarchy
of the bullpen
is. I'm curious,
too, because there was no press release that some dumbass named Timmy on Twitter told me that I missed where Ryan Stanek was sick during the first the divisional series.
Maybe.
And he was one of the players. I'm actually hoping that that was the case, that one of the multiple players that were mentioned in an article without naming names that had been experiencing some health issues due to an illness, not COVID-related. But if it was that he just wasn't 100% and maybe he will be for this series, then it all works itself out. It's a little bit puzzling that a guy with a 1.15 ERA didn't get the nod, at whether it's over Abreu or not, more frequently or at all in the first series.
Agreed, and thankfully it worked. If it didn't work, that would have been an easily criticizable decision by Dusty Baker, but he pushed all of the right buttons from a bullpen perspective. And look, it's on the guys to go out and execute. Obviously, the players deserve a lot of credit, but I'm with you. I was surprised by the lack of Stanek we saw in round one, and I'd be even more surprised
he
if
he did
saw
pitch, but it was at such a later point mm-hmm. in the series, you had to ask yourself, why the hell hasn't he pitched in games one or two?
Yeah, they were close games, right? Yep. It'd be one thing if you were blowing somebody out or getting blown out, and you're like, oh, let's throw these random guys in there. But, yeah, no, games one and game two were decided by one and two runs. So surprised we didn't see more Ryan Stanek. I assume he's fine. I think he'll be all right. And once again, I think we'll see more of him against the Yanks.
Yeah, the only game he pitched in was the game where everybody pitched,
yeah. mm-hmm.
except for Jose Urquidy, where it's like, yeah, you have no choice. And even then, they used him in the 10th. They used him after all of their leverage guys, if memory serves. They used him after Ryan Pressly.
And his stuff didn't look bad. He didn't look like his velocity was down on his fastball. So maybe it was that they were concerned that he just wasn't back to full strength.
Yeah, it looked normal. He looked normal in that game. How much of an advantage is gained, do you think, with the fact that the Yankees played yesterday?
Can you ask me in like 6 hours?
No.
Okay.
Can't.
You can't?
No, I'm
you
not.
Can ask me both
no,
times.
I'm not going to be speaking to you or anyone else.
Something for like a text or something after the game? Just,
no.
Okay.
Not happening.
Thought we were friends. Yeah, look, it should be an advantage, right? Like, why not? Why wouldn't it be? The Astros get to go 1-2-3-4 with their pitching rotation, and the Yankees have to start with their number four guy. They go 4-3-1-2 in these first four games. The Yankees, you know, it's weird. Y'all just talked about it. Urquidy didn't pitch in that series against the M's. The Yankees didn't use three of their relievers against the Guardians in a five-game series. They went the distance. Like, they have high-leverage guys that they trust way more.
No question.
They're not like the Astros, where it seems like Dusty trusts just about everybody in his bullpen. The Yankees aren't like that, so a lot of their high-leverage guys have been used a lot over the last few days.
Well, and to Jeremy's point, Boone is managing more like he's managing every game for the World Series instead of just, you know, trying to do what needs to be done in a certain game in a series. And I think when you look at it, there's only certain guys that he trusts right now. We joke and we talk about the pawpaw circle of trust and his gut feelings. I don't think he trusts a whole lot of guys in that bullpen right now with the Yankees, with the guys they've lost like Britton or the guy that fell off and just completely didn't want to be a part of it this year in Chapman. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's only going to go to guys that he knows he feels comfortable that can get the job done.
Yeah, which is an advantage early on, but we'll really see that advantage come to fruition in games 3-7, right, with no off day, potentially five games in a row. So, yeah, look, obviously the Astros got to go out there and win it, but I think they're the better team. They've got home field and they've got the rest advantage. It feels like there's a lot in their favor going into this thing.
To your point, Wandy Peralta pitched in literally every game for the Yankees. Yeah. The two of the other guys, the Holmes pitched in four. Johnny Lasagna pitched in four games for the Yankees. So those are the go-tos for Boone. I don't think it's so much that the Yankees played yesterday, because look, every Major League Baseball team is used to hopping on a plane, getting in late, playing the very next day. To me, it's what you talked about more about the arms, like Gerrit Cole not being rested until game three. They had to use Cortez yesterday. He's not rested till game four. The high usage of all of their other arms. It's not so much that they played yesterday. It's the state of where all their arms are entering the series. That's the advantage.
It wouldn't be as big a problem if you were the Astros in the same scenario because of the depth of your starters and all the guys that you've gone to that you know get guys out. The Yankees don't have that luxury.
They have a guy named Johnny Lasagna on there?
Team? Yeah.
Loaiza guy.
Oh, that guy.
I thought he was umpiring second base.
His nickname's Johnny Lasagna, yeah. Yeah. His nickname's Johnny Lasagna.
Who's umpiring second base tonight?
Jeremy, last segment's joke was that all the umpiring crew are Yankee guys because they all have Italian last names.
You want to see all the umpires in this series?
That's not good. As long as there's no Angel Hernandez or Joe West.
I saw a tweet that said Angel Hernandez will be behind the plate in game one.
You got got.
And I got God, evidently, because I was like, oh, geez. But I do remember that in the last couple times JV's pitched with Angel behind the plate, they seem to have a good rapport. So I was like, I wouldn't be as cringe moment as I would be if it was someone else.
Mm. It's the anti-Scott Foster, Chris Paul relationship.
Instead, we've got Frankie's Italian Kitchen supplying the umpires, according to Jeremy.
Look, there we go. Vic Carapazza has third base today. Chris Guccione has left field today. That's a Yankee crew.
Veal Parmigiani's actually in the left field line.
Wow.
It has become aware to me that there is one of these umpires that is from Houston.
Oh, look at that.
Is that true?
That is true.
Who is it?
I'm not going to say.
What do you mean
I don't want our listeners to know.
I'm going to say it during our show.
Adrian Johnson's right. He went to Milby High. Mm. He went to Texas Southern. So Adrian Johnson's a Houston native. I don't really know if Guccione or Carapazza are from New York. They sound like they are.
There's only one umpire that matters these days.
Adrian Johnson's a Milby guy. The guy behind the plate?
Yeah. I mean, that's literally everybody else's calls get reviewed if they're ever close.
We saw it in Verlander start in Seattle. He wasn't getting the high strike, and he struggled a little bit because of it. And Seattle, with a smaller zone to worry about, did what they needed to do and got lots of hits and runs.
I think being an umpire is now the second best job in Major League Baseball. Starting pitcher's number one because you work once every fifth day and make a lot more than the umps do. But when you're an ump, especially in the playoffs, like you actually work one out of every 7 days, and the other days you
just don't be the guy that has a name that's remembered because of your easy job in the playoffs.
Right. How about in 2 to 3 years though? Like even that job's eliminated. Like they're not going to do anything.
Who was the guy
they're
that
missed
the call in the Cardinals Royals World Series at first base?
I don't remember the play. I don't remember the name at all.
Yeah, completely swung and missed at first base, and it actually altered the World Series.
And it gave the Royals that World Series in 85. Yeah, I don't remember the guy's name.
The one that I remember recently, and it was a regular season game, so who cares? And it happened in Detroit, so
who cares? It was
Armando Galarraga, perfect game, and Jim Joyce, the handlebar. Yep. And he was crying. Remember, Galarraga took the lineup card the next day, and Jim Joyce was crying whenever he brought him out there. That was a special moment. That's how can you not be romantic about
just baseball?
Baseball,
man.
It's part of the
beautiful
ump show.
Thing.
How can you not be romantic?
It's part of the ump show. You follow the ump show? The next day. Yeah, that's why I go to the games. On my ticket, I have a picture of the umpire instead of a picture of the player.
There's a Twitter handle of the ump show. It shows all the ejections and stuff. It's pretty good. What's coming up on the wheelhouse today?
I got a hunch you guys already know the answer to that.
Football?
3 hours of Rockets season preview.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Well, that's Jake. He'll be in a minute.
That is Jake doing all that stuff. And Wakefield Crowbar with you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow, noon until 7, us till 3, Wheelhouse until 7. Swing on by, hang out with us. Great place to watch the game as well. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. Back-to-back days, pretty good work by Brendan. He's blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Wakefield Crowbar. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.